Okay, thank you. Once again, to thank to the organizing committee for this opportunity. And what I'm going to talk about is about three numerical experiments related to mass transport in the solar system. The work has been done, well, the three topics will be the first one about the distribution of low-energy lunar impact craters. This has been done with Elisa Maria, Alessi, and Josep Masdemont. The second example will be about two kinds of Mars-Earth transport, which has been done with Josep Masdemont and Joan Ren. And the last one, which is some current work that we are doing with Esther, Josep Maria Mondello, and Mercedes. So let's start with this first topic about the distribution of low-energy lunar impact craters. And the motivating picture is this one. Here on the left, you see which is the distribution of craters in the near side of the Moon. And on the right, you have many more craters in the far side. And what we tried is to see if there is some dynamical mechanism able to explain this difference of densities between one side and the other. So the questions are, first of all, if there is any reason for this asymmetry between the near side and the far side, or if does the Moon act as a shield for the Earth, or also which is the role of the Sun in all this process, and so on. What we know is that there was an intense lunar bombardment that took place a long time ago. Also that the Moon is receding from the Earth, but the rate of recession has not been constant a long time, and it has not a linear behavior, of course. And finally, I will concentrate in what we call low-energy impact craters. It will be clear why, but let me say, in the next slides, let me say that the velocity of impact is about this quantity over here, which means, depending on the size of the meteorite which impacts with the Moon and its composition and so, there are some tables which tell you which is the diameter that can be done, and it's around at most of 60 kilometers. As a first starting model, we will use the three-dimensional resistivity body problem, and we will mainly concentrate in the dynamics close to these two equilibrium points, which have behavior which is like a saddle times two centers. So this saddle part will be important. Here you see the plot of the surface of the Jacobi constant, or the effective potential, as you wish. So we will mainly concentrate in this L2 point, which is the one which is in the far side of the Earth and the Moon. So which is the approach that we have used? As I was saying, we will use as main channel to get to the Moon the stable manifold of the central manifold of this L2 point. We will use what we call transient trajectories inside this stable manifold. It will become clear in a minute what transient trajectories are. We will use different kinds of initial distributions for the initial conditions, and we will use different values for this Earth-Moon distance called here DEM. So that the main channel would be this stable manifold is more or less clear for a certain periodic orbit, for instance, or for a quasi-periodic orbit, it's almost the same. You have, in this case, some two-dimensional stable manifold, and you can go inside this two-dimensional surface in this case, and you get something that maybe evolves around the Moon or impacts with it, or can go around the Earth, which would be a situation like the one which is displayed here, can come out or not, and so we can have impacts in many, many directions. By a transit trajectory, we will understand an orbit which comes from outside and goes through, say, this stable manifold and goes to the other side. I will not enter into the details, except saying that these orbits are associated with these stable and unstable manifolds of this central manifold and cross this region around the L2 point. Except to say that in order to compute them, in fact, we should have to, in principle, compute all these tables, manifolds, for instance, of all these central objects, which are the periodic orbits that you can find there, but also all the tori that you have. This can be done, but it's more easy to relay in some kind of heuristic result, which is that if you only consider the two periodic orbits that you have around the point, one is called the vertical periodic, Lyapunov periodic orbit, and the other one is the planar one, and you take the manifolds, the stable manifolds, for instance, for these two periodic orbits until a given surface of section, for instance, x equal to zero, and you plot their projections in the yy dot plane or in the zz dot plane for the vertical orbit, you get these curves, and for all the other orbits that you have in the central manifold, their stable manifolds intersect this surface of section when you project them in these two planes, just inside the curve. So in order to generate these transit orbits, this transit trajectory, just what we can do is to pick up initial conditions inside these two curves. This is from a practical point of view, this is rather useful. So now how can we take initial conditions? We can take initial conditions, for instance, for each value of the Jacobi constant, which is some energy, take the initial conditions uniformly distributed inside this stable manifold, or uniformly distributed for each energy level for different values of the Jacobi constant, or to belong to a specific range of inclinations with respect to the Earth-Moon plane, etc. We have essentially explored these two possibilities. I will show the results just for one of them, of it. So we have explored, say, 10 to the 7 initial conditions and see what happens. And here's what you get. These are the results for two different values of the Earth-Moon distance. This is more or less the current one, and this one on the right. Lighter regions correspond to regions with higher impact probability or higher density of impacts. You see one over here and the other one over there. And, well, they do not correspond to what we were expecting, since the outcome that we get is that the large probability region of impact takes place in the apex of the lunar surface, or in the point in which it's moving, in the point which is in front. Second fact is that most of the impacts take place within the first 20 years of the integration, say, starting at these initial conditions that I have been mentioning. The smaller Earth-Moon distance, the higher the percentage of lunar impacts we have. We have more impacts in the left-hand side plot than in the right-hand. And the amount of particles that are still wandering around the Earth inside the zone bounded by the zero velocity surface, the one which was, say, around the Earth, after 60 years is something which is completely ridiculous. So now the question is if there are other sources for these low energy impacts, so impacts which come, which have their velocities controlled by those of you have on the these stable manifolds. And then what we do is some kind of inverse integration. So we take a uniform distribution of initial conditions on the surface of the lunar sphere with certain inclinations, and we integrate backwards the restrictive body problem equations. And what we get is that the impacts can come from the point, from the region that we were exploring, this stable manifold of the central manifold of L2, or even from the moon itself. So we can have some double collision orbits that can be supposed to be produced by ejecta deriving from some high energy impact or previous impact. So these are the results for this first experiment. Of course, then one of the questions was which was the role of the sun in this example. So instead of taking the restrictive body problem, we use a four-body model in which the motion of the Earth, the Moon, and the Sun is very, very simple. All of them are moving along circular orbits. We use exactly the same set of initial conditions that we were using just when we were integrating the restricted problem. And the results you get, for instance, for this distance, of course, this depends on an initial angle, an initial phase, which is related to this initial position of the barycenter of the Earth Moon system and the Sun at the initial epoch. So depending on this parameter, you get different results, but of course not so different. And here are the results obtained for two values, two different values of this angle, which are essentially the same as the ones that we got for the just using the restricted problem. So the outcome is essentially that the effect of the Sun reduces slightly the number of impacts on the trailing side of the Moon. As the distance decreases, the apex concentration increases. This happens also in just in the restricted problem. The percentage of impact depends on the distance and also from the initial phase that it should be. And the highest density of impacts oscillates in this close to the apex, but now in this range over, written over there. And eventually some trajectories collide with the Earth of these ones that we have integrated. So this is just for the first example that I was mentioning. And the second one has to do with mass transport from Mars to the Earth. This was motivated because some meteorites have been found in the Antarctica, which come from Mars or from the Moon even. So, and the motivating reference was this paper, well, the PhD of Gladman, which appeared also some time ago in Science, in which he did the evolution of a certain number of particles, 200, launched from the surface of Mars with initial velocity which is slightly higher than the escape velocity from Mars, which is of the order of 5 kilometers per second. And here is the time evolution of this set of initial conditions for 10 to the 5, 10 to the 6, up to 10 to the 8 years. And these lines over there correspond to the perihelion and aphelion distances of this particle. So when they cross, when this distance corresponds to one unit, which is the distance at which the Earth is, and you see that they cross after 10 to the 8 years, some of them, well, this can give some evidence that this transport from Mars to the Earth is possible. And what we wanted to see is which is the mechanism, that the dynamical mechanism that produces this kind of transport. And our starting point was, well, let's see if the manifolds of L1 for the Sun-Mars system and for L2 of the Earth-Sun system have some kind of intersection which could provide this transfer. And the answer is clearly no. Here we have superimposed the results for the Earth-Sun system and for the Mars-Sun system. And these are the unstable manifolds in blue for the L2 point of the Earth and here for the L1 point of Mars. And in red are the stable ones. And at least for a moderate time interval, which is the one which is represented here, there is no intersection at all. So in principle, this mechanism seems not feasible for this case. In fact, what we did instead, we said, well, let's see if perhaps for the Earth-Mars system this is not possible, but maybe for taking, I don't know, Neptune and Pluto or Uranus and Neptune, if this happens or not. So we are computing the minimum and maximum distances of these stable and unstable manifolds for all the, say, using the mass ratios of all the planets of the solar system. And the table you get is the one which is here. Here are these minimum and maximum distances and for L1 and here for L2. And you see that only this very simple kind of transfer is possible between Jupiter and Saturn, well, from Saturn to Jupiter, or vice versa, doesn't matter, and also from Neptune to, no, from, not vice versa, from Saturn to Jupiter, because this was the way in which we are trying to connect the manifolds, and also from Neptune to Uranus. With this in mind, we said, well, maybe it's because we are only considering a restricted problem, so maybe we must take into account more bodies in the model. And when we use the Sun, the Earth, Mars, and Jupiter in some restricted five-body problem, we took as a starting point several initial conditions on a family of Lyapunov, on the manifolds of the a certain number of orbits, on points on orbits on the on this periodic orbit that I have represented here, we saw that there were a certain percentage of initial conditions that were able to perform this transfer from Mars to the surface of the moon. In fact, the results were that taking 70 Lyapunov orbits with 100 initial states on each, on the stable manifold of them, around a little bit less than 1% of particles impacted with Mars. The average time of transport was of this order that I have written here, and the minimum velocity or minimum departure velocity for from the surface of Mars was 5.22 kilometers per second, which is around 200 more meters per second larger than the escape velocity. But since this was not clear, we tried to do more larger explorations to simplify a little bit the model in order to do the integration shorter. So when you consider, for instance, which is the gravitational potential due to the Earth, the Moon, and Jupiter, you see that the dominant one is by no means the one due to Jupiter, except if you are moving in a small neighborhood of the Earth or of Mars. So we decided, in order to study Mars Earth transports, forget about the Earth and forget about Mars, and just consider the Sun, the effect of Sun and Jupiter. And then, we computed, we took some set of initial conditions, fixing the value of the energy and fixing some surface of section and taking a lot of points in the remaining part of the phase space. We were looking for the aphelion and perihelion distances of these initial conditions at given epochs, and we saw that for each value of C, this region can be divided in three different ones. Well, there is an outer region which is forbidden because the value of the Jacobi constant, so we can forget about points moving there or there. We see region one, which are initial conditions of inertial orbits that do not intersect neither the orbit of the Earth or Mars. They are represented here. This should be the orbit of the Earth and here one of Mars. Sorry, in the converse sense, because these are negative values. This is Mars and this is the Earth. Region two, which is the one which is over there, which has initial conditions of orbits which only intersect the orbit of Mars. And finally, the region number three, which is this outer one, which intersects the orbit of the initial conditions which intersect the orbit of the Earth. So if we wanted to move from one region to the other, first we performed some simple Poincaré map explorations. We wanted to have in this, here are the coordinates of the Earth and the Mars respectively, which are more or less over there. We want to have some, say, large chaotic zone in order to perform in a nice way this kind of transfer. And in order to detect it, we fixed the value of the energy, the one which is the smallest one, this 3.03. And we start computing some periodic orbits of different periods in that region. So we were able to detect periods, I mean, the number of intersections with the surface of section that we took. We determined two orbits order four with four intersections of 5, 7, 8. Here you have some kind of initial conditions and also the stable and unstable eigenvalues of at least this number of orbits. Here they have a subtle component. And it was interesting to consider one of the two order four periodic orbits and the order five periodic orbits, since the manifolds of one of the order four saddle points has intersections with the orbit of the Earth, and the manifolds of the order five saddle point have intersections with the orbit of Mars. And moreover, these two manifolds have intersections with each other, so the transport between regions in this phase space can be completely described by the dynamical evolution of the loaf determined by the intersections of these stable and unstable manifolds. So we took some region, which is region labeled with a T, that should be over there. And after performing around 20 or 21 iterations of one of the regions, you see that you can move from region number two to region number three, and eventually you can go close to this position of Mars and the position of the Earth, providing this kind of transport mechanism. This is just an example of one of these transport orbits in the restricted free body problem, the synodical reference system, and this is the inertial one. We have depicted the orbit of the Earth and Mars. With integration time, which is not too large, it's around 1,200 years, or 300 more or less. And the third example that I wanted to show, which is, I have not too many results on it, but let me explain you a little bit the ideas. The motivation was this picture, which was produced by Shane Ross a lot of years ago, and Martin Lowe, in which they computed for couples of uncoupled restricted free body problems, say Neptune, the Sun, Uranus, the Sun, Saturn, and so on, the manifold just of the equilibrium points, and they integrated in time the stable ones, which should be these branches that come here, and the unstable ones, this was for L2, say, and this for L1, and they projected in this semi-major axis eccentricity. Well, we wanted to see clearly, because the details are not clear how they did it. Well, one detail that I know is that it was done with MAPLE, so you cannot rely too much on the results. We started doing the same kind of computations, but instead of using coupled restricted three-body problems, we started using four-body models, in which we always took the Sun, Jupiter, and the given planet, and the infinitesimal particle. And the starting point was to compute the dynamical substitutes of the equilibrium points, which now become some kind of periodic orbits which have as frequency the one of the planet. Here you see some of them. The ones on the left are for Saturn, Uranus, and Neptune, from outside to inside. And here for Venus, for Mars, and Mars on the right-hand side. These are, if you plot them in this Sun-Jupiter reference system for all of them. If you look at the synodical reference system, in which you must take into account which is the planet that you are included, what you get are very, very small orbits here, although the scale is not clearly seen, really are very, very small, since they are the dynamical substitutes of these equilibrium points. Well, they have an hyperbolic behavior, so you can compute their manifolds, and here I have represented the unstable manifolds for L1 of Neptune and the stable one for L2 of Uranus. And you see that after this number of time, we have taken 20 orbits of on each of the manifolds, and after a certain amount of time, they seem to intersect. So when you look a little bit closer to these regions, and even you, maybe I skip this one, you fix, for instance, a certain radius, which is square root of 22 for this particular example, but doesn't matter, and you look just on this intersection, which is the behavior of these manifolds, and first of all, if for those large set of points, you do the same kind of computations as Shane Ross and Martin Lowe are doing, you see that certainly between L1 of Uranus and, sorry, of Neptune and L2 of Uranus, you have this kind of intersection here in this plane, in the semi-major axis at eccentricity. For L1 of Uranus and L2 of Saturn, the thing is not so clear, and there also appear here a lot of spurious points that I will come to them in a minute. Then when you fix the surface of section, say this radius, and you look how the points arrive there, and if really you have points in one manifold that exactly connect with the ones of the other, you see that certainly in position, of course, they coincide. In velocity, some of them almost coincide, so you reach velocities that are really very, very small from some of the points here in the bottom. But also what you see when you point, when you compute for these points, which is the time required, it's of the order of 40,000 time units. So to get these intersections, you have to do these very, very long time integrations. And the point is if you can rely certainly in these kinds of computations, where do you the when you do them? And the answer is no. Look, this is the evolution of two very, very close points. The distance between them is of the order of 10 to the minus 10, taking on the unstable of manifold, I don't know if it was Uranus or Neptune at this moment. And you see that you can rely on them up to 4,000 time units. If you want it in years, you must multiply by 2, more or less, because 2 pi is the period of Jupiter, which is around 12 years. But we were considering time intervals of the order of 40,000, so the things must be done in a slightly different, well, in not slightly, in some different way as we have done here. And this is some work in progress that we are still doing. And that's all. Thank you. From Mars, well, we have done different kinds of experiments. One was just starting at the unstable manifold of the L2 point of the Sun-Mars system, and we saw that. Yes.
And my question is, what is the related change of the difference of the velocity of the particle on the orbit of the Mars?
It's about 100 meters per second larger than the escape velocity from Mars. The escape velocity of Mars is of the order of 5 kilometers per second, and you need at least to have 5.1 to get this transfer from the surface of Mars to the Earth.
Is it a reasonable number?
Yes, with a certain inclination, which is about 45 degrees, for instance. Because, of course, this depends on the inclination of the surface of Mars.
But this means that you have to compose the velocity of Mars?
Of course, you must add the velocity of the...
For
sure. Yeah. But as I didn't remember the figures for the velocity of Mars, I just was mentioning the escape velocity.
Any other questions?
Thank you.